This is CliffCentral.com.
Please note that the views expressed and the advice provided in this show are for general advice and entertainment purposes only. Nothing stated should be treated as a substitute for your own independent legal advice based on your own specific facts and objectives. Therefore, the presenter and CliffCentral.com accept no liability of any nature whatsoever, either expressed or implied.
Law, like you've never heard it before. The Laws of Life, with Gary Hertzberg on CliffCentral.com.
I'm Gary Hertzberg, and this is The Laws of Life on CliffCentral.com. Alongside me today, Lionel Makokotlela. Welcome, Lions.
Dumela, Gary, and dumela to our podcast. But we're just not an ordinary law show. We are the swaggest law show in the country.
Yeah. Nice compliment, Lions. Thanks for that. Today's show is what happens when you sign surety.
What is surety? Yes, you and your fancy words.
Yeah, questions we are answering include, how can I cancel a surety that I signed? It's a very popular one.
Mm-hmm.
What happens if the person for whom I signed surety goes under debt counseling?
Ooh.
Or if I sign for a company and the company goes under business rescue, what happens to my surety? Can I limit my surety? And also, what should I answer when my best friend asks me to sign surety guarantee for him? You know the saying, Lions, if you want to lose a best friend, lend him money or sign surety for him.
True that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Never mix the two together.
If we get there, we may touch on summary judgment. Some questions have come through on legal talk on that one. And we'll talk about that with our special guest today. Our special guest is Emil Myburgh. He's an attorney. He's been with us many times. Welcome again, Emil Myburgh.
Thank you very much, Gary.
We are in the company of the Rolls Royce. I mean, this man knows the law in out and center. And as we said all the time, if people have got any issues with regard to their legal topics, they can write it to us. And you'll give them the Facebook page, and I'll do the Twitter. But then we'll find somebody who's a specialist within that specific area to really uncover or unpack the load of the law.
Our Facebook page, The Laws of Life with Gary Hertzberg. Lion's Twitter?
At Hertz Law, HERTZLAW.
Yeah. Our partner today, Legal Talk South Africa, with their over 173,000 members. And we're taking a whole host of questions from their members.
Certainly. And we hope that they do share the information with other people that they stay with, their loved ones, just so that they can also get the information that they need insofar as charities are concerned.
Here's a question, Lines. My nephew borrowed money from me to buy a car. We're a close family, and I had no problem lending him the money because his father verbally promised that if his son didn't pay back the money, he would pay it.
Whoa.
My nephew repaid most but refuses to pay back the balance, and his father says he's not liable in law. And if I sue him, I will lose. What's he mean by this? Emil, what's going on here?
I'm afraid I think this father may be right. You know, if you want to have a surety, if you want somebody to guarantee the debts of somebody else, that surety must be in writing. That's the General Law Amendment Act that says sureties must be in writing. So I'm afraid.
I mean, it sounds a bit crazy because the father's standing there right next to him. He says, "Len, don't worry. If you lend him the money, I'll make good." And you take him at his word, you know. And then you want to sue him afterwards. He says, "No, but it doesn't comply with the law. A surety must be in writing."
It must be. I mean, I can't imagine that applying one's mind in depth, you may be able to come up with some kind of case, but it would not be based on surety because this doesn't comply with the requirements of a surety.
You may be able to say that the two of them took the loan together.
Maybe if you can classify them as co-principal debtors, then you may. That's why, you know, if I have a look at the standard surety, it always says, you know, I bind myself as surety and co-principal.
What does that really mean in law, co-principal debtor?
That means the creditor.
Jointly and severally, really. What is all that?
Yes, it means the creditor can, at his choice or her choice, sue either the guy that owes you the money or the surety. Because the surety is considered as the debtor as well. Nowadays with the National Credit Act, things are a little bit different, but that's the basis of it.
In other words, if you jointly and severally liable, the creditor can sue you alone, the surety.
He can.
He says, I'm going to waste my money on the principal debtor. He's got nothing.
He can.
You've got the money. You're the surety. I'm going to sue you. What happens if he sues successfully and the surety's got to repay or pay the money, can the surety get it back from the principal debtor?
Yes, that's one of the common law rights that the surety has against the debtor, is the right of recourse.
Yeah, he can always get his money back if he can get his money back. That's if the debtor's got the money to pay him.
Well, which is unlikely.
Which is unlikely if the surety's been called up.
Yeah.
We have so many questions, Emil, about people wanting to cancel the sureties. Judy writes, is there a way to cancel a surety for a loan? Please help. Now, sorry, before we get there, we know that the Consumer Protection Act provides a consumer can cancel certain agreements on 20 days, business days notice. And people seem to think that they can cancel their sureties on the same basis.
Yes, a surety is not a fixed-term agreement. You know, this 20-day cancellation only applies to fixed-term agreements. Oh. The most obvious one is a lease.
Wow.
And the fixed term can't be for more than 2 years. A surety is basically for as long as the loan lasts.
Well, assuming that the loan is 2 years and the surety is limited to 2 years.
No, you won't be able to classify surety as a fixed-term agreement for purposes of the CPA. I'm sorry, Judy.
Poor Judy.
Tough luck.
She can't cancel this darn surety. She's stuck with it.
Basically, yes. That doesn't mean you have to put up with a surety agreement forever. There is case law and authority for allowing a surety to ask the creditor to call up the debt. I make it sound a lot more simple than it really is. Mm. But in order for you to be set free from a surety, some way or another, the principal debt will have to be paid. Either you pay it or you force the creditor to take action against the debtor. But of course, if the debtor has nothing, that means you're basically forcing the creditor to go after you as the surety.
Mm. Nonna says, as a director of a company, I signed surety for the bank overdraft, but I've resigned as a director 2 years ago. I'm just an employee now, or maybe employee shareholder. If I resign from the company totally, am I still liable for the overdraft, or does the surety fall away? Someone at the bank, I won't mention the name, told me if I resigned, they would have to release me from my surety, but I wanted to make sure. So this is, there's a few issues here.
Yes. A surety is not dependent or doesn't last for as long as your status as a director or in whatever condition you signed the surety lasts. So you're a director of a company, you sign surety for the company, for the company's debts, and then you resign as a director.
Mm.
You're still bound by that surety agreement.
Even if you've been gone for 20 years, well, it's prescribed, but assuming that it's not prescribed,
You are
liable. That surety remains.
Even then.
That's why when people sell out of companies, they've got to make sure that their surety is lifted by the creditor.
Yes.
Now, sorry, Emil, we often have the case where the one shareholder who buys out the other says, "Don't worry, I will take over your surety." So the one who's selling out says, "Cool, bye bye." 3 years later, he gets a knock at his door and says, "Hey, pay up." The sheriff is there.
He must take active steps to make sure that surety gets cancelled. You cannot just accept the partner's word for it to say that, "Look, I will buy you out." And that in itself is not enough. Mm. Even if you do go to the bank that holds the surety, the bank can say, "No, we're not accepting you walking out. We've got no faith in this remaining partner's creditworthiness. Mm-hmm. So no, we're not releasing you from your surety." And there is nothing you can do except, you know, the limited recourse that I mentioned earlier.
There are so many people who have come to me as an attorney over the years and said, "I went to the bank, I spoke to Mr. whoever, and he said, don't worry, I'll cancel your surety," and that was that. And they think that they now off the hook.
You must get that
They're in the biggest trouble. You must get that in writing.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a common one, that where they think that the bank manager says, "Oh, you've sold out. Okay, so don't worry, your surety will fall away." Someone at the bank may even have it wrong.
And then there's the other thing. Almost every agreement that you come across, and most certainly every agreement that the bank has drafted, contains a clause that no variation or cancellation of this agreement will be valid unless reduced to writing.
Mm.
And the bank manager can say whatever he wants to. Yeah. If that is not reduced to writing, it means nothing.
Yeah. Mm. When someone comes to you and says, hey, please help me, I need a loan, I need a surety, it's not for long, it's a small amount, it's $6,000, but I need a surety, help me out. We're so inclined to really help our friend, aren't we?
We are, but it
Lance,
is
has
risky.
That happened to you?
Yes.
Many times. Or have you been the one that's asked the friend?
Well, let's not go there. But I do help people.
What do you sign for them?
No, I normally just help in the sense
you
that...
You give them 500 rand?
In good faith. No, yeah. Just good faith. Because I'm a debt counselor, so I'm like, you know, I have faith in you. I believe that you'll pay me back.
But you don't sign the surety, do you?
No, I don't.
If they say, please, just sign this,
no,
come with me and sign...
I'm sorry. I can't.
You won't?
No, I will never do that. Mm. Yeah.
No, it is just way too risky.
Yes.
You know, it's one thing signing surety for your son or your nephew that you've got an affection for, and you know that, okay, if he can't pay me back, then it's fine, and you do it for your child. But for, you know, total strangers, the risk becomes very big.
Yeah. It's not something that is advised, no matter who it is. You could be in a relationship with that person. They could be your best friend. They could be anything. Don't sign surety, because those sureties are there for as long as that debt is unpaid.
Yes.
And although you think, he's going to pay it off quickly, it's only $6,000, by the time you finish with interest and legal fees, that $6,000 has become $24,000.
Yes.
Thank you. And most people never think about those things.
Yeah, they think it's only six. Yeah. I'm exaggerating. It may not be 24, maybe 11,000.
Yeah. I mean, it's often an emotional thing, you know, like... What my uncle turned down, didn't want to sign surety for me. You know, what kind of an uncle, what kind of family is this? You know, it's very emotional.
Absolutely. Jackie writes, my husband signed surety for a friend to buy a house 9 years ago. Can we cancel the surety because that's standing in our way to buy our own house? The guy is well off today, but refuses to make a plan to release my husband from the surety. Can we sell the house to get out? Well, it's his house.
So no.
she can't sell his house.
No, the only thing she can do is either demand that the creditor takes action, which they are unlikely to do, or you know, Jackie, you pay the balance of the purchase price and claim it back from the debtor. Sureties can't be cancelled. As long as the principal debt remains, getting out of a surety is so difficult that I'm saying it's impossible.
I don't know whether you know offhand, when you apply for a bond, do they ask you if you've signed surety anywhere? I doubt it.
I think they do.
Do they ask?
I think they do, because you know, we've got a National Credit Act in force now, and credit providers must do a credit assessment.
Yes.
And that looks at all your assets and liabilities. If you've signed surety somewhere, that is a liability.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow. So once you've signed, it's like you owe the money, really.
Yes.
And when you apply for your own credit, you're in shtuk.
Yes. I mean, the only difference between a surety and a debtor is that a surety is one step behind the debtor from being sued.
Yes.
And in terms of the current, you know, these surety agreements, the creditor can go after you with as much ease as after the principal debtor.
Natasha wants to know, if we married in community of property and one of us signed surety without the other's consent, is the surety valid?
The Matrimonial Property Act requires that both parties, both spouses must give consent.
If they're married in community.
Married in community. Mm. But there are some exceptions. You know, if the husband or wife signs surety as part of a business, then the other spouse's consent is not necessary.
You have a panel beating business. You've been asked by your supplier to sign surety for the obligations of your company.
Yeah,
you sign. Your wife doesn't know. She's sitting at home. She doesn't know you've signed. The next thing, the house is registered kind of in joint names because you married in community. It's you've got a half share. You can lose your half share.
Mm. You can.
Without even knowing it, because he signed in the ordinary course of business.
Yes. Mm-hmm. If he went and signed for his nephew's study loan without his wife's written consent, then it can be attacked.
How does a wife or spouse protect themselves here? They've got to sit with their spouse and say, have you signed surety in the last...
month. Yes, yeah. You know, you're often thinking, you know,
you've got to give an accounting every month for what you've done in community property.
With utmost good faith.
It's a problem, isn't it?
Yeah. Look, I mean, if spouses don't communicate, if they don't tell each other, then there can be a risk.
Lana wants to know, my parents stood surety using their bond-free home for a business that my sister and her ex-husband ran. The business went under. Sure. If her parents have to pay under the surety, can they get the money back from her sister? I think we've touched on that. You can go back to the principal debtor and get the money back. Am I right, Emil?
Yes, you can. Yeah, you go after, you've got to write a recourse.
Here's one. Can you sue the surety if the principal debtor is under debt review? And the creditor, he's under debt review and the creditor is getting paid, albeit slowly, every month he's getting less. Can the creditor say, I'm not accepting that, I want to sue my surety?
He can. Actually, I saw this question and I've also seen that there are quite a few wrong answers, regrettably, but... And interestingly, I also had a look at, I don't know if you remember Professor De Wet. He was a
staunch... De Wet van die Transvaal. Not that one.
Staunch contract law professor at my alma mater at Stellenbosch. Actually, I had to look at his book again. He wrote a brilliant book on contract law yesterday when preparing. This is what we would call a personal defense that only applies to the debtor. The surety cannot avail himself of that. And there is actually case law on that, Nedbank versus Zevoli, or Zevoli, I'm not sure of the pronunciation, which is a recent decision, 2017-6, which dealt with this kind of defense in the context of business rescue. Mm. Now, the company goes under business rescue, which is kind of the legal person equivalent of debt counseling, and all debts are repayments are suspended. But that does not suspend the surety's obligation. So the creditor can go after the surety, even though the debtor may be under debt counseling or under business rescue.
Wow.
It's tough. That's why, you know, you sign surety, you've got to make sure that whoever you're signing surety for either has the means to pay back the debt or, you know, if it's your nephew or niece, that he or she is going to become a solid enough professional in order to be able to pay back that loan one day. Mm. Don't sign surety for people that you have, that you're not sure about.
You're shocked at this one, Lance.
No,
if the person goes under debt review, the surety is not protected. He must do what the De Wet van die Transvaal is. Wow. You know what that is?
Yes. Yeah, so I won't mention it on air.
Yeah, I've mentioned it. It's cock and batal. Yeah.
Do they pay the 50%? Let's say I can, instead of paying 100 every month, and now I go under debt review and I can only afford 50 rands. Does then the surety pay the other 50 rands so that it's 100?
Yes, although, you know, I don't know how many surety agreements you've seen. They are extensive. And one of the clauses they always incorporate is say, listen, that every clause that's in the principal debt agreement also applies here.
Okay.
And one is the acceleration of the debt. So you start missing payments, you go under debt review, the whole debt immediately becomes due and payable, especially with regards to the surety.
Wow.
Okay. Who's Cass Pointer? She's an administrator at Legal Talk. She's great.
Right? She is.
She's an attorney?
I don't know.
Yeah, but she gives, when people post questions, she gives great answers.
Yes.
Cass. Is it pronounced Cass?
Cass, yes.
Yeah. Have you met her?
I haven't. Yeah. She lives in Cape Town.
Oh, I see.
She did berate me once when I went down to Cape Town to see a client and I didn't hook up. Yes, she gives some of the best advice. If I'm not mistaken, she used to be in the insurance business.
Oh.
So she knows what she's talking about.
Wow.
Okay. Good. So many people find themselves bound by a surety, have we touched on this before in a previous show, where the sureties are couched in credit application forms, find themselves hidden in other kinds of contracts. Those are a problem, aren't they?
Look, before we get too despondent, I can see Lionel was getting very worried and it's not going to sign surety.
Wow.
If I can give him a little bit of consolation, it's not much. You know, preparing for this program and reading all the case law coming up after the National Credit Act came into consideration, One thing you can always toss up is to say, hey, listen, I signed surety, but I didn't do a credit assessment. Mm. One of the cases I read yesterday was an ordinary surety does not oblige the creditor to do a risk assessment, you know, a creditworthy assessment. Mm. But the moment you couch that as a surety and principal debtor, then suddenly the creditor is under an obligation to comply with the National Credit Act and to make sure that you are a creditworthy co-debtor.
Otherwise, it's reckless lending. The many lawyers listening to this will love this case.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I've this, you know, classifying everything as reckless lending seems to be become a fashion.
Yes.
In court cases.
The only way to get out of a claim is reckless.
Yeah. I've got a court case at the moment. Call it ordinary goods sold and delivered.
Yeah.
You know, the client, the debtor has run behind. He's not paying my client, and we're suing. And lo and behold, they raise a special plea that when my client sold these goods to the defendant, they did not comply with the National Credit Act. It was reckless lending because I didn't first make sure that the defendant would be able to pay back my client. Mm. And I'm thinking, this must be rubbish. And then I think, is it? Now we've got to deal with this, you know, and I've got a very good advocate assisting me with this. And she's but she's got to put in a lot of hard work to rebut this defense.
Mm. These are very often clutching at straw defenses, we call them. People are going to raise anything just to avoid having to pay.
Because I just don't think
it's... And put you to trouble and maybe put the judge to trouble or the magistrate.
Yes. And, you know, you come in front of a judge, you know, they're not always, with respect, trained in these intricacies, and you come up with a clever argument that's not necessarily right, and you lose the case on that technicality. Then you've got to go on appeal.
Yeah. Isn't that nice?
Nice, but it's not nice for the clients. You know, they get the invoice drafting notice of appeal, you know, item, you know, settled by advocate. You know, why do I not have to pay this? You know?
Yes. Yeah. Anything else on sureties, or should we touch on summary judgment?
Let's talk about summary judgment.
There's a question that came through, and many, but Helgard raised one. He says, good day, everyone. I need some guidance. I received a summons from the bank, so I've defended it. Now they've applied for summary judgment. What does that really mean? What is summary judgment?
Summary judgment means that the creditor is under the impression that you don't have a valid defense against the case, and you're now just defending it in order to waste time.
Mm-hmm.
But in order to apply for summary judgment, the debt has to comply with several requirements. The one most obvious one is that it must be a liquid debt.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, it must be readily ascertainable. You can't apply for summary judgment for an accident. Somebody bumps into your car, you sue them, they defend, you can't apply for summary judgment.
Mm-hmm.
But where the amount is certain or can be easily calculated, then in theory you can apply for summary judgment. But my approach is actually I don't apply for summary judgment anymore.
Because you never get it.
You never get it. Mm. You may get it once in a blue moon, but all you do is waste time.
You do get the defense of the defendant, of the debtor, on affidavit right up front. You know exactly what he's going to say, and it's in the form of an affidavit, which is very helpful when it comes to cross-examination afterwards. You said this in summary judgment in an affidavit. Now you're trying to change your tune a bit. So that's the advantage
that
I see very often in practice.
But the disadvantage is you waste 3 to 6 months.
Yeah, but that's the other thing.
You know,
absolutely.
And often, you know, clients.
So I mean, all the debtor or the defendant has to show is on the face of it that he has a bona fide defense.
Yes.
He doesn't have to show on a balance of probabilities. He doesn't have to prove anything. He's just simply got to show the reason I'm not paying you is because there's kind of reckless lending.
That's one thing that can come up with.
The unfortunate part of summary judgment, and that's why I wanted to raise it, is that the creditor can't reply to that affidavit at this point.
No.
Yeah.
No.
So all you have is just the defense of the defendant, and nothing to counter that.
Precisely.
So if the court says, well, he's showing a prima facie defense, I'm going to give him an opportunity to carry on and defend the case, and I won't give a summary judgment against him.
Yes, sure.
And that's really the effect of that.
Yeah. And, you know, with a skilled junior advocate, you can come up with a bona fide defense very easily that won't really compromise your case, even if you go under cross-examination.
Yes.
It is a nuisance for both parties, I admit, but... you know, if the case is not terribly complicated, I go straight to, you know, they defend and say, okay, file their plea within the 20 days. And then serve a notice of bar. Keep them straight to the time period.
Yeah, so you give them, you've got to give them 20 days to file a plea. And then once they file their plea, you can set the case down.
Yes.
And your case will be set down before the summary judgment would have been heard.
Exactly.
Possibly. Possibly.
And
depends
if
where,
it's a high court case, Gary, I don't know if you know, but you know they are now giving trial dates for November next year.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. You know, so...
Our clients should know this. When we tell our clients, sorry, this case is only going to be heard in a year and a half's time, they say, what?
Yeah.
2 years just to get a trial date.
Yes.
And that's the way it is, Lions, in our area, Joburg.
And our area is actually quite fast.
Mm.
Other jurisdictions, Cape Town, I've heard it's even worse.
Really? Well, yeah, that's, in a nutshell, really, summary judgment.
Mm.
And, yeah.
I mean, it can be a powerful tool. And I discuss the merits of it with my clients. You know, saying, listen, you know, we're going to get their version. It might be interesting. It might not be. But often you know what they're going to say. So this case is not the liquid claim. That's always the first one. They attack the locus standi of the person making the affidavit because the person making the affidavit
technicalities
must have personal knowledge of the claim. They say, well, this general manager didn't deal with this case ever, so he's got no personal knowledge of this case. So I don't think that it's really worth it, time and effort anymore.
Mm. It depends on many factors. We always say it depends. Each case on its merits.
Mm.
Emil Myberg, you're an attorney in Johannesburg. Many thanks for your contribution on sureties and summary judgment. We're going to get you back again on something.
Thanks very much, Gary.
Yeah, it's always interesting to be with you. To Lionel McCorker-Taylor, many thanks. Lines to our listeners, thank you so much.
Thank you.
We'll see you next Tuesday. Cheers.
Bye-bye.
This is CliffCentral.com.